taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Hello there, everyday Americans, and welcome to the Constitution Study, where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. Glad you could join me today. Today, my subject is bullies. Specifically, how do we deal with the bullies? You know, I've been talking a lot about the illegal actions coming out of Washington, D.C., and in some of our state houses, how governments don't have inherent power, people have inherent power, that governments are acting beyond the commissions of their constitutions, and what are we to do about it? Well, today I want to take a look at some of those, but I'm going to start out with an article I wrote describing why we cannot trust government to protect our rights. And as an example, I'm going to use a couple of cases that were recently opined upon at the Supreme Court involving qualified immunity.
Governments protecting their own with mock trials. This is nothing new. When our founding fathers published the Declaration of Independence, they listed 27 specific grievances against the king, including for protecting the military by mock trial from punishment for any murders which they should commit on the inhabitants of these states. Today, courts are protecting law enforcement by mock trial from punishment for violating the law and rights based solely on their opinion of what is clearly established statutory or constitutional rights. The Supreme Court recently opined on two cases where the question of a law enforcement officer's qualified immunity was in question. But we really have to ask ourselves two questions. First, is it constitutional to provide government officials with special treatment under the law? And second, do the courts have the legal authority to determine when statutory or constitutional rights have been established? One of the most important rights we have is a right to petition our government for a redress of grievances. Now, while there are many ways to petition, one of the most common is to sue in court. I mean, after all, courts are one of the three branches of government. So when you sue someone, you are petitioning your government for a redress of some grievance. What happens, though, when those courts shield government actors from the consequences of their bad behavior? That's exactly what's happened with the doctrine of qualified immunity, which is defined by the Free Legal Dictionary as a legal principle that grants government officials performing discretionary functions immunity from civil suits unless the plaintiff shows that the official violated, quote, clearly established statutory or constitutional rights of which a reasonable person would have known, close quote. Like so much of what goes on in the judicial branch of our governments today, qualified immunity is not a law. Rather, it is a standard made up by the courts for their own reasons. Now, originally, the idea of qualified immunity was based on two factors, the good faith and the reasonableness of the conduct in question. For example, if a law enforcement officer is given a warrant to arrest someone, most would generally believe that it has been legally issued. Therefore, if they executed the warrant and then it was found out that at trial the warrant was not legally issued and the defendant sued the officer for false arrest, qualified immunity would protect the officer. In this case, the officer made the arrest in good faith with the reasonable belief that the warrant was valid. In the 1982 Supreme Court case, Harlow versus Fitzgerald, the court was concerned about the subjective aspects of a person's state of mind. How are we to know if the agent was acting in good faith? That would require a trial, probably by a jury. The court expressed concern that these trials diverted official energy from pressing public issues and deterred able citizens from accepting public office. So the court decided to change the standard of qualified immunity to the one quoted above. Now, while the language seems pretty straightforward, the problem comes with who the court uses to determine what is clearly established statutory or constitutional rights of which a reasonable person would have known. See, the answer is not the Constitution or the laws of the United States, but rather the opinion of judges. See, this has not only led to some truly crazy and bizarre decisions, but some horrendous violations of the rights of the American people. Which leads me to the two cases the court recently opined on. Now, while the outcomes in both of these cases are reasonable, they show how the courts have replaced the supreme law of the land with their own opinions. First, the case of the city of Tulaco, Oklahoma versus Dominic Rolas. Officers were called to the home of Dominic Rolas' ex-wife, Joy, after she called 911. Mr. Rolas was in her garage, intoxicated, and refused to leave. Joy led the officers to the side entrance of the garage, where they began speaking with her ex-husband. Mr. Rolas expressed concern that they were going to take him to jail. The officers assured him they only wanted to get him a ride. One officer asked Mr. Rolas if he could pat him down for weapons, which Mr. Rolas refused. Body cam footage shows Officer Gerdner gesturing with his hands and taking one step toward the doorway. Mr. Rolas reacted by taking a step back, turned around, and walked toward his tools, which were in the back of the garage. The officers followed Mr. Rolas, but maintained a distance of at least 6 feet. Mr. Rolas picked up a hammer, turned, and held the hammer as if preparing to swing or throw it at them, which prompted the officers to draw their weapons and yell at Mr. Rolas to drop the hammer. Instead, Mr. Rolas moved from behind a piece of furniture, giving him an unobstructed path to one of the officers, raised the hammer as if to charge or throw it, and in response, two of the officers fired, killing Mr. Rolas. Mr. Rolas' estate sued the two officers in federal court, claiming they violated his rights protected by the Fourth Amendment to be free from excessive force. The officers moved for summary judgment on the grounds of qualified immunity. At issue before the court was if the Tenth Circuit's overturning of the district court's granting of qualified immunity was valid. In the court's opinion, the answer was no. Not because they believed Mr. Rolas was the victim of excessive force or because they saw a violation of the Fourth Amendment. The court specifically stated in their opinion that they were not deciding either of those issues. The Supreme Court overturned the circuit court because they didn't use the right precedent. The Tenth Circuit contravened those settled principles here. Not one of the decisions relied upon by the court comes close to establishing the officer's conduct was unlawful. Notice, it was not the law that determined if the actions of the officer was lawful or not, but the opinions of previous courts. And because the Supreme Court doesn't think that the law clearly establishes the rights of the people, the estate of Mr. Rolas is denied his right to petition the government for a redress of grievance. Next, the case of Daniel Rivas-Villegas versus Roman Cortesaluna. I hope I got that right. The Union City, California police officer, Rivas-Villegas, responded to a 911 call reporting that a woman and her two children were barricaded in a room, fearing that the woman's boyfriend, Mr. Cortesaluna, was going to hurt them. Officer Rivas-Villegas and other officers commanded Mr. Cortesaluna outside and on the ground. While handcuffing Mr. Cortesaluna, officers noted a knife in his pocket. While removing the knife, Rivas-Villegas briefly placed his knee on the left side of Mr. Cortesaluna's back. Now, Cortesaluna sued in federal court, claiming Officer Rivas-Villegas used excessive force in violation of the Fourth Amendment. The issue before the Supreme Court was whether Officer Rivas-Villegas was entitled to qualified immunity. Interestingly, the district court granted qualified immunity, but was overturned by the circuit court. The Court of Appeals held that Rivas-Villegas is not entitled to qualified immunity because existing precedent put him on notice that his conduct constituted excessive force. In reaching this conclusion, the Court of Appeals relied solely on LaLonda versus County of Riverside. Now, one judge dissented, stating that there was insufficient details in LaLonda case to make it clear to every reasonable officer what Officer Rivas-Villegas did was excessive force. The Supreme Court agreed with this dissent. We agree and therefore reverse, even assuming that controlling circuit precedent clearly establishes law for purposes of Section 1983, LaLonda did not give fair notice to Rivas-Villegas. He is thus entitled to qualified immunity. Now, in both cases, issues before the court was not the use of excessive force, but whether or not the officer was shielded by qualified immunity. Now, looking at it from the other side, the Supreme Court was deciding if the original petitioners would be granted their right to petition the government for a redress of grievances. In both cases, the court sided with the government. And in both cases, the court based its decision not on the law or the Constitution, but whether prior courts had decided what the officer did was wrong in a sufficiently plain manner. Does that sound like the rule of law to you or the rule of a few? Now, that's not all. How many of you have heard the phrase, ignorance of the law is no excuse? Can you get out of a speeding ticket because you didn't see the sign? Can you avoid the penalties or possible jail time because the IRS regulation you violated was not clearly established? Can you avoid a trial by simply claiming you had not been informed of some court opinion that found what you were doing was illegal? The answer to all these questions is no, unless, of course, you're a government agent. See, Article 6, Clause 3 of the Constitution requires that the oath taken by all executive and judicial officers include that they support the Constitution of the United States. Yet courts have claimed they only need to follow that oath if a previous court had clearly found the specific actions of those in government clearly violated the document. See, Article 6, Clause 2 of the Constitution states that it and the laws of the United States made pursuant to it are the supreme law of the land. However, the courts have placed their opinions above the Constitution and established themselves as the supreme law of the land. And just to add insult to injury, how is a court supposed to establish that the specific actions of government actors are a clear violation if those cases are never heard by a court? These two cases are more proof that the government in Washington, D.C. is now filled with criminals. Going to federal court for a redress of grievance today seems more like going to the Corleone house than a court of law. Your fate is no longer decided by the laws of the nation, but by the opinions of oligarchs in black robes. Once again, we see a government protecting their own from punishment by mock trial. So when do we declare our independence from this tyranny? When will we the people realize that the people we hire to represent us in Congress have the legal authority to deal with this gross miscarriage of justice? Not until we the people realize that, as Abraham Lincoln said, the people are the rightful masters of both Congresses and courts, not to overthrow the Constitution, but to overthrow the men who pervert it.
So here we are with a government protecting its own from the tools of justice, denying us our right to petition the government for redress of grievance. And this is not the only example. If you've been following the news lately, you've heard about the National School Board Association letter that was sent to President Biden, who he then sent to his AG, Merrick Garland. This letter has been, they've apologized for it. It's driven several school boards to leave it. They provide absolutely no evidence of any of the threats and or even the attacks that they've claimed were there, much less any justification for referring to parents as domestic terrorists. But you see, that doesn't matter. So we have Attorney General Garland was testifying before a Senate Judiciary Oversight hearing, and he said he's going to keep watching parents, even after the School Board Association letter turned out to be not based on anything. It was a biased letter. Where's our redress of grievance? What do we do when someone falsely accuses us and when it's found out to be false, the government continues to investigate us? What do we do? Well, that's actually a very, very good question. Now, 12 members of the House, by the way, all of them Republicans, have sent a memo or sent a demand to the Department of Justice that they rescind that Merrick Garland rescind his memo sicking the FBI to monitor and police school board meetings. Now, let's remember, the federal government has zero, absolutely zero powers to police school board meetings, none whatsoever. There's no interstate crime involved. There's no power delegated to the United States to oversee here. These are local issues. Any threats or attacks made are local issues. But you see, that doesn't matter anymore. Some group created a inflammatory letter, and now the DOJ is after them. And, oh, by the way, even when it's found out that letter was a mistake, they apologized for it, only two board members sent it, yada, yada, yada. Still, now that door is open, now that horse is out of the gate, now that we want to close the gate, we want to close that barn door. And here's Attorney General Merrick Garland saying, we're still going to do it. And we have a bunch of people going, bad, Mr. Garland. Bad, bad, Mr. Garland. Stop doing that. I mean, they basically said, hey, his testimony that I was just talking about was troubling. Quote, you acknowledge that you issued this unusual directive soon after reading about the thinly sourced letter sent by the NSBA to President Biden, and not because of any specific request from state or local law enforcement. So what are they going to do about it? They added, during your testimony, you sidestepped the obvious effect of your ill-conceived memorandum and the chilling effect that invoking the full weight of the federal law enforcement apparatus would have on parents protected by the First Amendment speech. Okay, so that's a memo. So what do they do? Where's the teeth behind the memo? I mean, maybe they feel better because they sent a memo, but where's the teeth behind it? Where's the pointing out of the impeachable offense that Merrick Garland has committed? I mean, he has initiated an investigation based in an area that is not within his jurisdiction. He has, when it's found that the probable cause he used for that investigation was not valid, he's continuing the investigation. This is intimidation. This is an impeachable offense. So where's the threat of impeachment? Well, it's only 12 House Republicans. The Democrats control the House. I don't care. You're telling me that they don't have the spine or the backbone to do the right thing because they can't win? What happens when they have power? Do you think they're going to use it then? We have to stop depending on governments because too many people in government are more interested in the show of letters than they are in actually doing their job to represent the American people. Now, we've been talking about the NASB stuff, but I want to take a look at another example. See, businesses are now pleading with the Biden administration to delay his vaccine mandate on his private business vaccine mandate until after the first of the year. Well, let's start out with this idea of pleading. See, pleading is not the act of a citizen. Pleading is the act of a subject. Pleading is the act, the begging, the action of a subservient, of a servant to their master. Here's problem number one. If these businesses are really concerned with the upcoming illegal regulation out of OSHA, stop begging for your rights. Act on them. Inform the president that they have no legal authority to mandate medical regulations on those businesses, that you will not comply, that you will stand, if necessary, with force against the implementation of an illegal, tyrannical act. And that, in fact, as a violation of your oath of office to faithfully execute the laws of the United States, you will be petitioning the representatives in the districts that you work, that your businesses are in, to file articles of impeachment. They don't need to beg. They need to stand. We need backbone. We need intestinal fortitude. We need to stop being people that are mamby-pamby. Oh, we're subjects. We have to do what we're told. No, we are the masters of both Congresses and courts, and we are the masters of the federal government. We did not authorize this. We will not comply. And if you come after us, if you mean to have war over this, let it begin here. I'll fight it so that my children don't have to. Labor unions are concerned. Why? Because it's going to put union people out of work. But again, first of all, the law that created Occupational Health and Safety Administration doesn't authorize them to create medical mandates. The law that created OSHA is not a law of the United States made pursuant to the Constitution. Therefore, it is not the supreme law of the land. The OSHA regulation, when it comes out, will not be the supreme law of the land because it was not a law of the United States created in pursuant of the Constitution. The law that created OSHA was not created pursuant to the Constitution. The law that created the Department of Labor, of which OSHA is a part, was not created pursuant to the Constitution of the United States. It is not the supreme law of the land. And according to both Alexander Hamilton and the Supreme Court, those acts are void. They are empty. They are meaningless. When are the American people, both individually and collectively, as in businesses and unions, going to stop acting like slaves, like subjects, like servants, like serfs, and look at the government they created and the ones that we set the limits on and say, no, bad government, bad, bad government, you're not going to do this, and we will stand against you. See, a business that is pleading for relief, I won't support. A business that stands, that I will support. You see, we seem to forget the whole structure that our framers created. The preamble to the Constitution says, we the people do ordain and establish this Constitution, the very Constitution that created the office of president, that delineated its powers, and that says in the 10th Amendment that any power we don't specifically give to the United States, they don't have. But like a spoiled child that's allowed to get away with bad behavior over and over and over again, government simply does its misbehavior, its mischief, its illegal activities because they know they'll never get punished for it. So the fact that the OSHA regulation, the fact that governments are going far beyond their delegated powers is not solely their fault. Yes, they are breaking the oath of office because we have let them get away with it time and time and time again. And we have the legal means to stand against them. The Constitution is our authority to look at the government and the federal government in the eye and say, no, we did not authorize this. This is not a power we delegated to you. That act is illegal. That act is void. We will not comply with a void order, and we will remove the people who violate the law, violate their oaths of office, violate our rights. We will not stand for it anymore. Sadly, there are very, very, very few people speaking like this. There are very few people who recognize that they voluntarily submit to the bully. You see, the federal government cannot force businesses to require mandates, to require vaccines. They can't. Businesses must voluntarily comply. Oh, but they'll get fined. Businesses must comply with the fines as well. But they'll dock our, then the banks will voluntarily comply. And if you're doing business with a bank that will voluntarily steal from you to pay an illegal fine, I don't think I want to do business with that. It's a mindset of freedom and liberty, a mindset of living as a free citizen, not a subject, not a slave. I know it's odd because we weren't taught this in school. We were taught to be good little serfs, to do what we're told, to not challenge the authority. Which is where you get nonsense from people like Psaki saying that the OSHA regulation supersedes state law because of the Supremacy Clause. When the Supremacy Clause says absolutely no such thing. It's why we must educate ourselves because those in power won't. They aren't educated. They aren't interested in being educated. They have figured out that they can do just about whatever they can get a group of them to agree to, because the American people will simply lie down and let it happen. And until the American people stand up and tell the government in Washington, D.C., we created you, we can take all of you out and pick people that are better suited for this, that will protect our rights. Or as the framers of the Declaration of Independence put it, But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evidence is designed to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and provide new guards for their future security. Ladies and gentlemen, it is your right. It is more than your right. It is your duty to throw off the government and those in the government in Washington, D.C., who are perverting the Constitution. As Abraham Lincoln said, the people are the rightful masters of Congresses and courts, not to overthrow the Constitution, but to overthrow the people who pervert the Constitution. How long are we going to stand for this perversion in Washington, D.C.? How long are we going to let the perverts in Washington, D.C. continue to destroy our rights and liberty? When will we start standing up and using the most powerful word in the English language, the word no? That's the act of free people. See, we call ourselves the land of the free, but we act like the land of the slave. But there are some that are standing up. There are a few. And I'm going to talk about them after the break. But before I do, I want to remind you to check out Healthy Cell, made with a maximum absorption technology. Healthy Cell vitamins feed our bodies at a cellular level. They help you sleep better, feel better, just boost your immune system, stay focused. Now, if you're like me, sometimes you have a hard time getting sleep. I have a hard time sleeping when I'm on the road. So try Healthy Cell's REM sleep. It'll help you fall asleep. It'll help you stay asleep. It'll help you sleep deeper so you can wake up refreshed and fight for liberty with the resolve that we need. And as an America Out Loud listener, you get 20% off your first order. Just go to healthycell.com/outloud. Pick one of their formulas, REM sleep, immune super boost, focus and recall, pick whatever. But that first order, you'll get 20% off. And if you need help sleeping, REM sleep is the way to go. So again, go to healthycell.com/outloud or use the code OUTLOUD at checkout.
In 2008, the amount of concentrated time people could spend on a task without becoming distracted was 12 seconds. 5 years later, it was only 8 seconds, 1 second less than a goldfish. If you find yourself always distracted or having trouble recalling information, you're likely to fall behind in the demanding, fast-paced 21st century. In other words, brain performance is more critical now than ever. Boost your brain power with Healthy Cells Focus Plus Recall. Science-backed nootropics to sharpen focus, concentrate longer, enhance recall, improve mental speed, learn rapidly, and be more alert. It's a pill-free brain supplement made with maximum absorption technology designed to feed our brains at the cellular level. Take it for a test drive. Go to healthycell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Focus Plus Recall. That's healthycell.com. Code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
There was a time when Americans could rely on the Fourth Estate. Well, in these challenging times, the media is both reckless and complicit. AmericaOutLoud.com. Top analysis from leading experts, articles, podcasts, video, and 24/7 talk radio. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study, and today we're talking about dealing with bullies, specifically the bullies in government. Now, it was a sad day when I saw that a California In-N-Out Burger was shut down for refusing the illegal mandates from Governor Newsom and the state of California. Now, I must admit, I don't, you know, I'm not that familiar with In-N-Out. I was introduced to In-N-Out when I was in California for business. I was there with a friend of mine who actually had grown up in California, lived in California many years, was very familiar with In-N-Out Burger. So he introduced me to the infamous double-double animal style. I have to admit, it's a good burger. And I've already talked about an In-N-Out Burger outside of San Francisco, I think, that was standing up. But the Pleasant Hills In-N-Out Burger has been shut down because even after they received 4 citations and over $1,700 in fines for not testing their customers or verifying that their customers have been vaccinated before allowing them in. Now, I want to make something very, very clear. I did a little bit of research. I'm not an expert in the California Constitution, but I did do a little bit of research. And pretty much the closest thing I could find in the Constitution of California that would involve checking the vaccination status of customers is Article 14 that says the legislature can create legislation to protect, among other things, the health and safety and general welfare of workers. Okay, but it's still dependent on the government to prove that their regulations are necessary. Because Article 1, Section 7 of the California Constitution says a person may not be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law or denied equal protection under the law. So before a government can enact a law to follow due process, it must use a process that protects the rights of the individual. So what we have here is a state issuing a mandate. I don't even think it went through the legislature. I think there was an executive order. So it doesn't even follow the other part of the California Constitution. This is simply a mandate issued by the executive branch that violates the Constitution of California and of the United States. And this In-N-Out Burger said, we are not going to comply. And now it says the reports are that it has been shut down. Now, Annie Weisinger, she's a chief legal and business officer for the In-N-Out chain, said that the store properly and clearly posted signs that outlined the vaccination requirements for indoor diners, but said the store refused to act as a vaccination police for any government. See, that's probably the biggest problem here is you have the government telling these businesses that they must act as law enforcement. It's their job to regulate. I don't think the people of California gave the state that power. Ms. Weingartner went on, it is unreasonable, invasive, and unsafe to force our restaurant associates to segregate customers into those who have been served and those who may not. I'm sorry, those who may be served and those who may not, whether based on the documentation they carry or any other reason. So now, I'm curious, because it says they're shut down. I'm curious to see how they're shut down. You see, the question becomes, does In-N-Out Burger, do the owners of In-N-Out Burger, need the government's permission to do business? I know there are health department codes and there are business licenses which can be revoked. But does the Constitution allow that your right to do business is dependent on approval by the government? Now, again, this is a large chain. I don't know how far they're going to want to fight this. But this, is to me, is interesting to say, we don't recognize your authority to order us to do this because it's not allowed by the Constitution. You are depriving us of our liberty and our property without due process of law. You have not shown. It's interesting. A statement by the Contra Costa County health officer was, this order is necessary now to save lives, protect our overburdened healthcare system, and slow the pandemic enough to keep our schools open. Where is your evidence? See, due process isn't because somebody said we need to. Necessity is a reason for every infringement on human freedom. Where's your proof? They don't have any. So this shutdown, these fines, these invasions, these shutdowns, they're illegal. They violate the California Constitution. They also violate the 14th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. So the question is In-N-Out Burger simply going to say, we looked at this and said, sorry, you don't have the legal authority to do this. We won't comply. And if you steal our business license because we won't comply with an illegal order, executive order, not a law by the legislature, representatives of the people, nope, we're going to create an illegal order, we're going to act like kings and potentates, then not only will we sue, will they revolt? Will they stand up? I'd like to see it. Another example, a mother, this one scared me. A mother in Louisiana is threatening to sue, claiming that her 16-year-old son was vaccinated without her consent. Now understand, the law requires that someone taking this injection have informed consent. Understand, every quote-unquote vaccination, right, because they're not really vaccinations, every quote-unquote vaccination available in the U.S. is under an emergency use authorization. But Paul, they approved Pfizer. Actually, they approved Pfizer under the Comirnaty brand, which Pfizer is refusing to distribute within the United States. And by law, besides the fact that the emergency they're using for this EUA does not exist, but it says you must be informed, you must have informed consent. And being a minor, this son, this boy, could not legally consent. So she is alleging that while at a some sort of vaccination clinic at her high school, her son was allowed to sign a consent form. He's a minor. He cannot give legal consent. And that he received a COVID vaccination despite the requirement of a parent signature for people under 18. So they violated the law. Now, this woman has gotten an attorney, and they're talking about suing. Apparently, the boy felt pressured to take the shot. Like I said, it's a mobile clinic they brought to the school to inject the students. So they're talking about suing. Well, here's what I want to know. When are the criminal charges being filed? Yeah. See, according to this, a nurse with the clinic, presumably knowing that the client was below age, or at least he's in high school, he's likely under 18, she gave him a consent form that required a signature of a parent or guardian, instructed him to sign and print his name and date it, and then gave him an injection without proper consent. That's assault. That's also battery. Right? There was an illegal contact, a knowingly illegal contact, where a minor was done harm. They were injured. They were given a potentially dangerous biological agent without proper consent. They was done with the threat of bodily harm. He was pressured into signing this piece of paper as a faux idea of consent. He was intimidated. So you have a case of assault and battery against the nurse. You have a criminal case of battery against the nurse. You also have a civil case against the nurse, against the school, against the clinic. It's one thing to say, yes, we want to sue. It's another thing to say, no, we want criminal charges pressed. If someone comes up to my daughter, now my daughter's an adult now, so she can consent. But when my daughter was a minor, if they injected her with an experimental drug without my permission, trust me, it would not be we're going to sue. No, no, no. I would be heading to the police going, I want a warrant issued. I want arrests made. I have evidence. This is a crime. Now, why do I pushing the fact that it's a crime? Because let's say this mother sues, and let's say she wins. Well, who's going to pay the fines? Maybe the school, meaning the taxpayers of the county, are going to pay the fine. Okay, well, it's the taxpayers of the county that hired these idiots, so there is some compensation to that, but okay. The company that owns the mobile clinic will probably pay because they're the ones that actually committed the trespass. They're the ones that committed the assault. But what about the nurse? See, this is the scary part. The nurse gets away scot-free because it is the nurse who pressured a minor to sign a document who, if not knowingly, reasonably should have known there's a high chance this person is a minor, therefore requiring parental consent, but she gave them the shot anyway with an experimental drug. These are still emergency use authorizations. This lady was willing to experiment. This nurse was willing to experiment on this mother's son. That, you know, when Mengele did it, we called it crimes against humanity. When a nurse does it in a school, in a clinic at a school, we go tisk, tisk, tisk. No. This is not simply a suit. This needs to be dealt with and investigated and figure out who authorized this, who actually did, and they need to be charged with the crimes they committed. So what can we do? Well, like I said, we have to stop looking to government to protect our rights, because they won't. The school didn't protect the rights of the child. The county didn't protect the rights of the child. The state didn't protect the rights of the child. But that doesn't mean states don't have a role. States should be standing up against this tyranny. So when I saw this article, I was very happy. Governor Kay Ivey of Alabama signed an executive order. I know we've been rousing about terrible executive orders, but she signed an executive order that I can get behind. And after all the whereases and why-fors, they finally get to, here is the order. Effective immediately, all agencies, boards, commissions, and other entities within the executive branch of the state government shall cooperate to the fullest extent possible with the Office of Alabama Attorney General in furtherance of litigation brought by the state to challenge any federally imposed COVID-19 vaccine requirement. Okay. Number two, effective immediately. No agency, department, board, commission, or other entity within the executive branch of the state of government shall, under color of state law, seek to impose a penalty on any business or individual for noncompliance with any federally imposed requirement that has been proposed or effect of, which has the purpose or effect of A, forcing an individual to receive a COVID-19 vaccine, or B, requiring a business to force employees to receive a COVID-19 vaccine. Three, effective immediately. All agencies, departments, boards, commissions, or other entities within the executive branch of the state government shall enforce, to the maximum extent possible, any and all protections afforded to public employees in their workplace by Alabama Act No. 2021-493 concerning the issuance, publication, or sharing of immunization records not otherwise required by law, or concerning the vaccination requirements imposed as a condition for receiving government services for entry into a government building. I love this legalese, kind of wraps around your tongue. Effective immediately, number four, by the way, effective immediately. No agency, department, board, commission, or other entity within the executive branch of the state government shall, under color of state law, include in any agreement, including any contract, contract amendments, yada, 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 a provision imposing any duty or obligation on a private party to the agreement with respect to a COVID-19 vaccination status of the party or any of its officers, employees, or agents. Number five, this order shall be implemented to the maximum extent possible, consistent with applicable law, and subject to the availability of appropriations. So in other words, Governor Ivey has basically done what I've been begging governors to do. Stand up to the federal government and say, no, We created you. Yes, the preamble says the people do ordain, establish the Constitution. We did not do it directly. Article 7 says that the Constitution didn't take effect until 3/4 of the states, of the then states, approved it. No change of the Constitution can happen without the consent of the states, of 3/4 of the states. Therefore, the federal government works for the states. And here you have a governor saying, we will not comply. We won't use state funds. We won't use state regulations. It's a wonderful step towards freedom and liberty. And I've seen a couple of news articles on it. I think this is very important because, again, these are states standing up and making a point. Making a point that they are not vassals of Washington, D.C. That they are the creators of Washington, D.C. And it's about time they start acting that way. Now, here's another example. Here we go. That was a state level. How about the county level? I keep saying we have to defend our counties. Our counties are our home bases. If Washington, D.C. and our state houses are the front lines in this battle for freedom, our counties and our towns and our neighborhoods are the home base. They are the source of our supply lines, and we must protect them. So when I found that that Elkhart County, Indiana, did something you almost never see, they turned down federal money. That's right. See, the Centers for Disease Control has a grant for $3 million. They've got a bunch of these grants. They've got like 70 of these grants going out. And the whole idea is to deploy community health workers to help what they say is disadvantaged and minority communities get increased COVID-19 testing, contact tracing, and vaccination. But I'm sure people say, but it's free money. I mean, we always hear this free number, except free money is never free. It comes with strings. You see, in the grant is this one little line. It would require the recipients to, quote, assist the United States government in the implementation and enforcement of federal orders related to quarantine and isolation. Apparently, that was too much. As one county councilman put it, that one sentence is my no. I refuse to say whatever the federal government tells me I have to do, I have to do. I will never do that. So bravo to the residents and the councilmen of Elkhart County, Indiana, for standing up to the tyrants, for not taking the bribe. Right? Because that's the bribe. That's here, we'll give you money to do something, but you're going to have to, you know, we'll make you an offer you can't refuse. We'll give you this money. You know, Guido will give you this money, but you're going to have to do us a favor. We're going to come to you one day and ask you to do a favor, and you can't say no. Elkhart County said, no, we're not doing it. We're not taking the money. And I hope more counties won't take the money. I hope more counties will realize there's nothing so expensive as free money. You take that bribe and they own you. So I want more counties to take the lead, to follow what Elkhart County did and say no. Stop accepting the bribes from Washington. Stop letting Washington tell you what you can do because you've been bought and paid for. If you've accepted one of these grants, you've accepted a bribe and you're complicit with it. You have sold your rights and liberties for a bowl of promises, of empty promises and lies. And you should be ashamed of yourself. But there was one more that came in here, and I want to get to this because Texas is, at least in this case, is doing what I've been begging them to do for so long. Now, many of you may remember that Texas had a pretty brutal winter this past year. I mean, they had problems with their wind farms. They had problems with their grids going down. It was pretty bad. So according to KVUE.com, the leader of the United Nations says Texas must end its reliance on oil and gas production to remain prosperous in the era of climate change. At a UN summit next month, world leaders will be asking to rapidly cut greenhouse gas emissions in half by 2030. A vast increase in the production of renewable energy will be required to reach these goals. If Texas wants to remain prosperous in 2050 or 2070, Texas will have to divert its economy and Texas will have to be less dependent on oil and gas. Texas is prosperous today because Texas is based on what was the main factor of what was wealth and power in the last century, oil and gas. What we are seeing is, with these things changing, the green economy will tend to be preponderant, the preponderant in the future, according to UN. Now, what was Greg Abbott's response to this? My favorite two words, pound sand. His tweet, he tweeted a response, Texas to the United Nations, pound sand. He said, the world is reeling from spiraling fuel costs caused by the premature over-reliance on renewable energy. Just look at what happened. You know, part, not all of what happened in Texas this past winter was based on renewable energy, but a large part of it was. He says, and he points out, Texas oil and gas is needed right now. What's more, if there's one place that these economic nincompoops at the UN should be lecturing, it's Texas. Right? Texas is the world's ninth largest economy. And according to the Federal Reserve of Dallas, the state's economy is booming and jobs are being created. Sounds to me like Texas is doing a pretty good job. But the future of the planet, well, guess what? These same UN people who are telling us that we need to blow up our grids, blow up our economies, blow up our energy resources because we're all going to die, have been wrong for decades. What was it? The IPCC said we were all going to drown by 2020. Then it was, before that it was 2015. Before that was 2012. Before that was year 2000. I think before that they said we're all going to freeze to death by 1980. These idiots are wrong. So I'm glad to see a politician look these idiots in the eye and just say, pound sand. No, we're not going to do that. We are going to do what's best for our people. Now, if and when fossil fuels become no longer viable for technical reasons, not for bureaucratic reasons, then Texas may consider a change. Until then, they're going to do what is best for them. It's enabled them to mass produce food, to operate water delivery systems, to heat homes, run factories, and do all of this. And the UN wants them to give that up for the promise of green energy saving them when they've got no evidence that it'll happen anywhere within the foreseeable future. All of their models that said we're all going to die have all been wrong. And like the boy who cried wolf, we should just ignore whatever they say until they can come up with data that actually fits reality, that they can prove is accurate. They, you know, I keep talking about trust but verify. They have squandered all of their trust because every time we went to verify what they said, we found they were wrong. So thank you, Governor Abbott, for showing the American people that we are not subjects of the United Nations. They have no legal power over us. None. The only treaties we've signed with other members of the UN are valid if they are within the authority of the United States as established by the Constitution of the United States. So guess what? We aren't subjects to the UN. We aren't vassals to the UN. The fact that we have political leaders that bow and scrape and pay homage to them is insulting. And it is a violation of the Constitution. It is a usurpation of power. It is in itself a form of insurrection to replace the legitimate government of the United States with one controlled by an outsider. It proves the fact that George Washington mentioned in his farewell address, that this dependence on party, this spirit of revenge, leads to a form of despotism. He said, quote, it opens the door to foreign influence and corruption, which finds and facilitates access to the government itself through the channels of party passions. Thus, the policy and will of one country are subject to the policy and will of another. Bravo, Governor Abbott, bravo. And to the rest of us, these should be examples that we are not subjects and vassals. We are not serfs to be ordered around. We are the masters. It's about time we start acting like it. Because unless we, the people, act like the rightful masters of Congresses, courts, executives, governments at all levels, we will continue to fall as their slaves. And I don't know about you, but I'm not interested in being the slave of some petty potentate, some tyrant, just because they got elected. That is not the land of the free. And that's not the home of the brave. So I'm asking the American people, become brave. Find that intestinal fortitude. Find that bravery, that willingness to stand up and live free, not as subjects or slaves. Support that by education. That's what we do here, is to help educate you so you can exercise and defend and assert your rights and do so properly. And if you want to find out more, you can always head to constitutionstudy.com, find out more about the work that we're doing. I have some news that will be coming up in the very near future that you may be interested in. But if you just check out that website, you'll find everything there. Because if we don't stand for liberty and freedom, if we don't learn from what Reagan warned us, then the day is fast approaching when you may have to explain to your children what it was once like in America where men were free. Now, America Out Loud Talk Radio plays on the iHeartRadio network. You can listen on our media player from any web browser anywhere in the world. We have the best-in-class apps for Apple, Android, and Alexa. And we can stream 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, not just the live radio, but also the podcasts. So listen, stay informed, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity.
Paid the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends.